the sixth case for today, United States versus Myers.
May it please the court. Good morning, your honors. My name is David Morrison, and I represent Martin Myers. I represented him at the district court level as well. With regard to the first issue in this appeal, it was originally brought up in the Richardson case by the Seventh Circuit, asking whether or not there was a reason why people who were charged under 2252A as receivers of child pornography should be treated differently from those who were charged under the possession portion of that same statute. The court noted in its opinion that this was a rather tenuous distinction, as because when a person is a possessor, that means also at some point they must have either one, been a receiver of that information, or number two, they must have produced that information themselves.
How do you respond to the government's argument that not all persons in possession of such pornography will have knowingly received it? It could have been included in legal adult pornography, it could have been found or given by someone else, and that when a person knowingly receives such pornography, which has been mailed or transported in interstate or foreign commerce, they provide a market for such pornography that, you know, that contributes to the continued abuse of children. I mean, wouldn't that potential contribution to the market for these items justify a higher base offense level?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the argument of the appellee is misplaced, because with regard to knowing possession and knowing receipts, they want to limit the time frame when you can have knowing receipt. They want to say that if at the moment that it came into your possession in a stack of papers that you haven't looked at, for instance, or in a computer file that you have not looked at completely, at that very moment, if you don't know, you cannot be guilty of knowing receipt. If you limit the time frame, they want to limit the time frame on the receipt issue, but then say for knowing possession, if the next day you look through the stack of papers or you look through this computer file and you find this information, that then you are knowingly possessing it. But by the very definition of receipt and possession, at the moment that you see it, discover it the day after you've received this material, you are in knowing receipt of it, and if you continue to possess it, then you are both guilty of knowing receipt. It's the moment that you discover the material and its content that is important. I don't think that you can, on the one hand, limit knowing receipt to the very moment that it comes under your control, whether you have knowledge of it or not, and then for possession say, well, we're not going to limit the time frame for possession. We're going to say if you discover it later on, that's enough for knowing possession. Now, I think that one of the cases that was cited by the appellee in this case, which I'm probably going to butcher the name, but Stromowski case, highlights this point. In that case, it was a person who was charged with simple possession of child pornography, and the court was trying to distinguish or decide whether or not 2G2.4 subsection C, which is a cross-reference to sentencing guideline 2.2G2, should be applied. And in that case, the court said that they were not willing to say that all, the court said that they must decide whether all instances of receiving that can be presumed, can be proved in a possession prosecution require application of the cross-reference. When they talk about this, they say, unless we equate receiving with intent to traffic, which we have said we are not prepared to do, then the simple admission of receipt is not enough to trigger the cross-reference. So although I know in that case we're not dealing with someone who has pleaded guilty under the receipt statute, it is applicable in this case, because the court says we're not willing to say that all receipt equals trafficking. Another case which I believe also sheds light on this is the Ellison case, which is also cited in my brief and also I believe by the Appellee's brief. In the United States v. Ellison, they were looking at relevant conduct and some magazines that had been found in a person's possession that included some sadomasochistic depictions. And in Ellison, the court said that even if a person has these in their possession for their simple use and consumption on their own without the intent to distribute, that still creates a market for such materials. So I think that when you look at the two offenses, they both create they both create a market for this type of material. So whether it's an individual who receives something on their email, doesn't know what it is, doesn't look at it for a couple of days, then discovers what it is, I would submit that he has knowingly received as soon as he discovers what it is and continues to keep it, because the definition of receipt is to come into possession of something, and that in fact creates a market. And I believe that that has been borne out in the reasoning of the various cases that I have mentioned to the court. With regard to the second issue, I believe that with regard to an enhancement for depictions that depict violent, sadomasochistic, or sadistic material, that those issues are dealt with in the base level offense itself. First, with regard to the requirements to be guilty of the underlying offense, you have to have depictions of children or minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct. The definition of sexually explicit conduct includes all kinds of various things, including vaginal penetration, which is the issue in this case. Then, with regard to the enhancement, there's a specific enhancement that if the depiction involves a minor who is a prepubescent, there is a +2 addition that takes into account the age of the child. Then, by using the additional 4-count or 4-point enhancement for sexual conduct involving a prepubescent child, you add an additional 4 points. So what you do is you take the underlying conduct that is required, that element, add it to another enhancement element, which is the age of the child, count them separately, then add the two of them together, and add another 4 points onto the sentencing guidelines, which I believe is inappropriate in punishing him twice for the same conduct. I believe that neither of these issues have been addressed by the Seventh Circuit before. We would ask that the court find that the application of the sentencing guideline 2G2 to receivers is in violation of my client's constitutional rights to equal protection under the law, because receiving and possessing are, in fact, the same offense. And with regard to the enhancement, we'd ask that the court overturn the district court's decision to enhance the offense by 4 points as inappropriate or double counting in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison.
May it please the court, my name is John Mahochko. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the United States in this matter. I'd like to focus my argument on, first, the defendant's constitutional challenge to the sentencing guidelines, and then briefly discuss the application of sentencing guideline 2G2.2B3 for depictions of sadistic, masochistic, or otherwise violent conduct. First of all, the defendant has identified no suspect class or fundamental right in this case, and therefore the guideline is subject only to rational review scrutiny. It need only bear some rational relationship to a legitimate government interest, and it's the defendant's burden to negate every conceivable reason why the guideline would be structured the way that it is. He's not been able to do that. I don't think there's any question in this case that there is a legitimate governmental interest in stemming the tide of child pornography and halting the exploitation of children. The question is whether or not the guideline is rationally related to that interest. And as a threshold matter, there simply is no equal protection argument here, because there is no equal conduct. Receiving and possessing are entirely different offenses. I think we discussed that pretty thoroughly in our brief. There are a number of instances in which someone could acquire the child pornography without committing the offense of knowing receipt. And if the offenses are not the same, there simply isn't an equal protection argument. But even if you do get to the equal protection issue, the rational reason is the market theory. It's been discussed by this court in the Elkin case that the reason for the distinction between the penalties for possessing child pornography and receiving child pornography is that receipt implicates the market and feeds market forces that in turn drive the exploitation of more children and the production of more child pornography. And it's important to note that in this case, the defendant pled guilty to both receiving and possessing. It was two counts. They were grouped for purposes of sentencing, so that the more serious offense of receipt is not at issue here. He unquestionably received the pornography. As far as the enhancement under 2G2.2B3 for sadistic or masochistic conduct, a number of other circuits have addressed this very issue. The Second Circuit, the 11th Circuit, the 5th Circuit, and the 8th Circuit. Every circuit court to address this case, this issue, has held that, of course, that enhancement is appropriate in this case, given the nature of the conduct, the age of the child involved. It's obvious to everyone involved without the need for medical testimony that conduct would have been painful for the child involved.
For an enhancement under that section, is it sufficient if the subject experiences pain, or does the conduct have to be done for the purpose of or the intent to cause such pain?
Well, Your Honor, for purposes of there are three different ways of enhancement can be applied, and that's probably the best way to answer the court's question. It can be sadistic, masochistic, or an other depiction of violence.
Okay.
Within the term of the guideline. I think as an other depiction of violence, you don't have to get into the intent of the person that's
okay.
committing that act. It's just the exertion of physical force so to injure or abuse. When you're talking about sadistic or masochistic, then there might become an issue about whether or not it's being done for gratification, but I think sexual abuse of a child is sort of by the nature of the act indicates that it's being done for the pleasure of the person doing it.
Okay.
Unless the court has any further questions, I will ask the judgment and sentence of the district court be affirmed and return my balance of time to the court.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Morrison? Anything further? You have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Just briefly, once again, on the issue of receiving as opposed to possessing, I do believe that the Stromowski case is very relevant in its discussion and talks about not all receiving equates to distribution. And if our reason for treating receivers differently than possessors is because that's all in the chain of distribution, then I think that the court certainly would have found that receiving did equal this distribution, or being inside of the chain of distribution, and the court clearly did not make that ruling in that case, and I believe it is applicable in here, even though that was a possession case. The Tromowski case involved an individual who got on the internet, downloaded some child pornography, so we have transportation within interstate commerce of child pornography. Fortunately for him, he had the benefit of being the term used was possession rather than receiving, and I don't think that it is fair to treat like or similarly positioned people differently, and I believe that it violates my client's right to equal protection. Thank you.
Mr. Morrison, you were appointed in this case?
That is correct, Your Honor.
We appreciate your excellent work and the appreciation of the court for taking the case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.